Welcome to Wrestling and Everything Coast to Coast. This time, it's just myself, Buddy Sotelo, and my good pal, Benny Scala, from the Dan and Benny in the Ring. Did you guys fight over who got to be first in that? You know, whether
it was there was no fight, although my contract's up for renegotiation, so it might be Benny and Dan in the Ring pretty soon.
Sure, I think it should be. It's the Benny Scala Show.
Or just Benny in the Ring, yeah, who knows?
Yeah, it's the Benny Scala Show, time permitting, Dan Castellano.
Yeah, Sebastiano.
Sorry.
Castellano sounds good.
I got him mixed up with the guy from The Simpsons, Dan Castellano.
It's got a good ring to it.
Yes. So welcome to the show this week. It's always great to have you on. You know, when we were last talking, you had hope that the Yankees might be accomplishing something, and I had hope that the Giants might accomplish something. And we're both looking forward to football season, I think.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's pretty sad when 42 games into the season, you already lost hope. They're 23-19. Although I think they have the eighth best record in baseball. The problem is they have the fifth best record in the AL East.
Yeah, and meanwhile, the Giants are in a division that isn't very good. But at 17-23 now, we're looking like we are the team that, you know, it's interesting because we want to judge so badly. And I don't think you'd be helping the Giants that much.
Yeah.
You know, you're spending all that money on Judge and you're not getting your money, your dollars worth.
He's not earning his $40 million for the Yankees, in my opinion.
Yeah, well, and Correa hasn't been all that great either. So the things the Giants thought were going to save them didn't work out being all that great. And then I'm mourning my city, the loss of the Warriors to the Lakers on Friday.
I was very surprised with that one. I thought for sure they'd go over.
You know, the Warriors were such a bad road team, and they showed it. And it was very upsetting to me that the losses, the last two losses on the road for them were by 30 and by 21, 22 points. So they have a lot to work on. And it's too bad. I'm a huge Steph Curry fan and Warriors fan, but I'm just going to – this will probably be the last time I wear the Warriors shirt till the season starts again next year, and I'll have to – dust out all my Giants stuff, although I'm not sure I want to be seen around town wearing that stuff either. But it's that or the A's, who are probably headed out on the out on a rail, you know, if the city of Oakland can't get its act together. I don't know if you followed that story at all.
No, I just know that right now I think they're on pace to beat the Mets record in 1962 of 120 losses.
Oh, yeah. 8 wins so far.
Right.
And I mean, they are looking like a bad indie wrestling show, you know, with you know, where the players outnumber the fans.
What a shame, though, because you talk about a team with a great tradition of winning. You know, unfortunately, it hasn't happened lately, but I mean, they really gone down the tubes.
Well, yeah. And I don't know if you saw me posting earlier last week, but I had an opportunity to meet Vida Blue twice.
Wow.
And Vida Blue, you know, it's sad. He talked about how difficult it was to see, you know, to be on a team that won all those World Series in a row, 3 World Series in a row, you know, to where they are today, and how, you know, today actually they had an event where you could throw Rotten Tomatoes at pictures of the owner and the commissioner of baseball, and you know, so the fans could at least get their anxieties out.
They're probably trying to see if somebody had an arm so they could sign them up.
Yeah, well, it's with the way it's going right now, they should just, you know, have a buy one ticket, get a section free.
You know, buy a ticket and become the fifth starter or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's a sad fate for a team that won, was actually really the first team in the San Francisco Bay Area of all the teams to win a championship. You know, you think of all the titles that have been won here in the Bay Area, but it started with the A's in 72.
Right. They had the three in a row, right?
Yeah. Yeah. But before the Warriors won, before the 49ers won, before obviously the Giants won in 2010, you know, it was the A's that was the first Bay Area champion, then followed by, you know, the Raiders along with.
Right.
And it's, you know, now both of those franchises leave behind nothing. At least the Warriors just moved across the base, so the fan base didn't really have to change, and they didn't really lose their city. It just, Oakland lost out on a lot of revenue that San Francisco is now, you know, gaining. That, you know, Chase Center now generates millions of dollars for San Francisco, and Oakland couldn't get its act together and get a stadium there. And I used to go to a lot of things at the Oakland Coliseum, including wrestling matches, too. You know, they used to have a number of WWE shows out there. I remember seeing Hulk Hogan and Roddy Piper against Mr. Fuji and Don Morocco.
That's about what, 86, 87-ish?
Yeah, right about that, 86.
Okay.
Right. Wow, that's pretty good history on your behalf, you know.
Well, when you said Piper and Hogan, I knew that Piper came into the WWF in 84, and I think within the next 2 years turned babyface.
Right.
So that's what put it at 86. I'm, you know, in my own mind, I'm thinking back in the day when I was a kid, it was the San Francisco Warriors. I don't know when they changed the name to Golden State. Was it maybe in the 70s?
Yeah, it was. They wanted to make it more marketable. They thought that was, you know, like, it's rare because you really don't have two. Well, technically, the New York teams represent New York, the state, not necessarily New York City. You know, I don't say it's the New York City Yankees. It's just the New York Yankees.
Right.
So technically, those could represent the entire. But usually, there aren't really a lot of, you know, teams that represent. You had the Florida Marlins, but now they're the Miami Marlins.
Right. You got the Minnesota Twins instead of the Minneapolis.
Yeah, and
Twins.
The Minnesota Twins and the Timberwolves.
Right.
Don't represent Minneapolis, although, I, you know, weren't they the Minneapolis Twins for a little while? I forgot.
No, the Lakers were the Minneapolis Lakers.
Yes, the Minneapolis Lakers, yeah. For sure.
No,
yes.
They were always Minnesota. And then it was the California Angels, then it was the Anaheim Angels, then it was the
Los Angeles of Anaheim.
Right.
That's even worse. That name's even worse. But
the one I don't get, though, is the Jets or the Giants. Why are they the New York Jets and New York Giants when they play in New Jersey?
And they both play in the same place.
In the Meadowlands, yeah.
Yeah, well, it's a good point. And say, the 49ers don't exactly play in San Francisco anymore. They play in Santa Clara, which, if you live out here, you know, it's like a really significant drive difference between Santa. I mean, when you're out on the East Coast, it seems all like the same distance. But it's, you know, like it's not like a Tampa to Orlando type difference, but it's because of the traffic. It almost could be, you know,
right.
Because it's some of the most trafficked corridor in the United States, that from San Francisco to San Jose is like, it's 50 miles, but it can take two, three hours when, you know, traffic doesn't go the right way, which is 90% of the time.
Out here. Right.
But so one thing you wanted to talk about tonight was your wrestling magazines. And I'm always game for that. I have a slightly tragic story is that my dad, who died 2 years ago in 2021, I had stashed all my, like, wrestler, Pro Wrestling Illustrated, all that stuff underneath the house because I thought it'd be a safe place even from his wretched girlfriend. But there was a major flood about 8 or 9 years ago.
Oh, wow.
And not only did I lose all those Pro Wrestling Illustrated, The Wrestler, a bunch of wrestling programs from shows that I went to, including, I think, the first Royal Rumble at Arco Arena. I think I lost that, too. But a lot of Playboys, original Playboys and like some, and my Dynamite magazines. Do you remember Dynamite magazine?
That might be
a little bit past, because you and I are a little bit age different. I think that's more, it was a kids magazine, but it was a great, great magazine that introduced me to so much cool pop culture when I was a kid. And
so how many magazines did you lose?
Probably about five Banker boxes worth at least.
Wow.
Yeah.
And how far back did they go?
Oh, the wrestler stuff was all like 81 through like 86, 87. Okay. So it's a lot of really cool stuff. A lot of Ric Flair, a lot of Abdullah the Butcher on the cover, stabbing Dusty Rhodes with a fork. A lot of Hulk Hogan, his early stuff. Like a whole spread on him winning the IWGP, the Grand Prix Cup in Japan.
Oh, right.
You know, there's a huge article on that, you know, before he ever became big in the WWF. That was like his first really major accomplishment, major wrestling award, was winning the Grand Prix in Japan. I mean, people forget how over Hogan was in Japan. You know, even before he was a star here, he was a star there.
And his actual wrestling style in Japan was so much different because Vince only wanted him to use that limited moveset. But in Japan, he did a lot more wrestling.
Yeah, he sure did. Well, when the IWGP, they were, you know, they wouldn't have any of that nonsense of just, you know, the big boot followed by the leg drop. No one would buy that. You
right.
know?
They took their wrestling very seriously.
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely. And they still do. You know? I mean, you still find the New Japan product probably is more quality than anything that the WWE and maybe even AEW put out.
Right.
You know, I think the in-ring product is just better. Not so sure about the storyline. Some of them are harder to follow because of the lost in translation concept.
You know, I really kind of feel bad for the younger people because they don't realize how important these magazines were, though. I mean, I'm going to go back. So I saw my first show, I think it was April 26, 1968, at the Island Garden in West Hempstead, New York. And I had just become a fan maybe within a few months before that. But then the next month, May, my best friend, my next door neighbor, had his mother let him take off for his birthday. And he was going to go to the mall, the Huntington Mall. It's called the Walt Whitman Mall in Huntington, Long Island. And somehow I convinced my mother to let me go with them. And I brought whatever money I had saved up. I figured I loved back in the day. Remember not the Mad magazines, but they had actual little books. They had like Spy versus Spy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I used to read those all the time.
God
bless Al Jaffe. He's the guy that had most of them.
So I knew there was a bookstore, and I figured maybe I could pick up a couple of those, two or three of those. And, you know, like I said, I had just gone on my first show about a month before. The minute I get into that bookstore, there's a magazine rack, and it was a Wrestling World, I think, and Wrestling Review and maybe The Wrestler. And there went my money, and pretty much there went my money for the next, I would say, at least 5 or 6 years. Any discretionary income I had, disposable income, all went to the magazines. But the thing I was going to say was that the first time I opened a magazine, because all I saw was WWF, which was emanated from the National Arena in Washington, D.C., I see these other wrestlers. I'm thinking, who the hell are these guys? I had no idea that I thought like the entire scope of professional wrestling was what I saw on TV on Saturday night. And I had no idea there was guys in Carolina. There was guys, you know, there's a guy named Fred Blassie in Los Angeles. There was a guy named Ray Stevens, who was a god in San Francisco. I had no idea. Man, I got an instant education, but boy, was I hooked.
Well, kids don't really understand, you know, now making us sound so ancient, but the wrestling was something you had to really go out of your way to find. You know, it was not so obvious, like every Monday night it was always on, you know, for 3 hours. And then, you know, Tuesday and Wednesday and Thursday and Friday. And then they show stuff, you know, their pay-per-views on Sunday. And you can also catch, you know, reruns of everything on demand and all this stuff. I mean, that was something that, you know, and you were really, because of regionalism, you only got to see a certain number of guys. Now, of course, you were in New York, so you got the cream of the crop. You know, you got the best wrestlers did come into New York when you were younger. But here in San Francisco, not that we weren't a major wrestling city. We obviously were. But we got our selection was, for a long time, mostly AWA and some WWF. And then the WWF slowly took over and took over everything. But we were mostly in AWA territory. So the plus is I got to see a lot of the early Road Warriors, you know. The minus is I got to see a lot of Greg Gagne. You know, so that was like, you know, a lot of Corporal Kirshner. A lot of Colonel DeBeers versus Greg Gagne matches.
Okay.
Which are times of my life I can't get back.
Right.
You know, that was my time wasted watching two guys that I really don't want. A lot of Buck Zumhoff. A lot of Mr. Electricity Steve Regal matches, you know. I got to see a lot of early Ric Flair, Rick Martel, but the guys from the Mid-South area, we never got to see. Never got to see the Freebirds. Never got to see Ric Flair, Dusty Rhodes, you know, the Andersons, the Wrecking Crew, you know. Those guys, Tully Blanchard, you know, the Masked Superstar. I really wanted to see the Masked Superstar in action. You know, it wasn't until much later that he came to the WWF.
You know, you had an advantage, I think. I'm gonna find out here in a second over me though, because when I was a fan, you know, again, this is in junior high school in the late '60s, wrestling wasn't something you really could talk about openly. You knew there were certain kids in your school that you knew were wrestling fans, but it was almost like a secret society. You never brought your magazines in. And then, like, when you saw one of the jocks walking over and you were talking about wrestling, you know, all of a sudden it was, hey, how about that filet of haddock in the cafeteria today?
You didn't want
them to know you're talking about wrestling.
Benny, it started that way. And then in my junior year of high school, the rock and wrestling connection occurred. WrestleMania occurred. And that changed everything.
Oh, absolutely.
From being something that you would never talk about. I actually had a really cool high school history U.S. government teacher who was Mr. John Laborhack Thompson, who was totally checked out. I mean, he's a really nice guy, but he was like, he let the class run itself. And so he's like, well, you know, WrestleMania is going to be history. So why don't you give a report on WrestleMania? So I watched the closed circuit of it, and I gave the next day, you know, on Monday, I gave like an oral report on WrestleMania and the results of WrestleMania to all my class students. And you know, John was right, though, because he said Mr. Thompson was right in the sense that that was going to become a historical event, and it has been.
It sure was. Yeah, sure has.
One thing that I've been doing is showing my daughter films that I consider, and she's 11 years old. I'm showing her films that I consider significant things that you want that explain cultural history and the development of mankind. So I had to show her Rocky III. Okay, she wasn't so into like the early part of it, but I made sure she watched the Hogan Thunderlips moment and that she knew who Mr. T was and she knew who Rocky Sylvester Stallone was.
Sure.
And she also got to hear the Eye of the Tiger song.
Right.
Because how can you talk about the 80s and leave out A, Sylvester Stallone, B, Eye of the Tiger, C, Hulk Hogan, and D, Mr. T? If you try to explain the 80s and you leave those four things out. Then have you explained the 80s to anybody? No.
No, that was a huge chunk of the 80s.
Yes. Yes, it really is. Right there is kind of the intersection. And how that particular role then spawned everything, you know, to go so much more into, like, mass media, you know, and this relates to the wrestling magazines. Because it sort of took things and made people want to watch it on cable. And, you know, remember the old cry, I want my MTV.
Yep, sure do.
And get your cable stations to get MTV, to get TBS, so you could see Mid-South and later, you know, the NWA wrestling show, like, you know, Georgia Championship Wrestling or you know, eventually it would be the NWA telecast from 4:05 to 7:05 or 6:05. You would, at least here on the West Coast, on Saturdays.
Yeah, it was 6:05.
Right. For you guys.
Right.
But for us here, I think it came on at 4:05. So you wanted to, I remember like having to like drop whatever I was doing on a Saturday and like get home in time, because we didn't have a VCR then, or we had a VCR, right? But the problem was it was upstairs in my parents' room, and like they wouldn't let me go in and record wrestling. Plus, videotapes were like $5 a piece back then. Do you remember that?
Oh yeah.
And so they were like precious. Like you'd have one tape that you would record over and over and over again until it just got all grainy and you just couldn't take it anymore, you know? And everyone had their own personal tape, but like, you know, you had to like get, if you recorded over somebody else's family tape, there was just hell to pay. I don't know if that ever happened over at your house.
Oh yeah, no.
It was a great moment in the Jackman family when we got a VCR downstairs and for the downstairs TV. That was like a huge like freedom family moment that I didn't have to like ask my parents if I could go watch, you know, something in their room, which they would inevitably say, "No, we're watching 60 Minutes. We're watching Columbo. We're watching, you know, the CBS mystery movie, or we're watching McMillan and Wife, you know." And so, you know, Rhoda, my mom never missed Rhoda, you know, she never missed Rhoda. They never missed 2020. So like, you know, if you want, God forbid, you wanted to watch something on my parents' VCR, you know, and the thing is, you go, well, why don't you just move it downstairs? People don't understand that the VCRs of the early 80s weighed like 145 pounds.
Yeah, you have to be a power lifter to.
For whatever reason, they were like the size of like a small bookcase. You know, the tape wasn't that big, but those things were like super heavy. We had the ones where you to switch the channels on, you had like these up down levers on there that would get you the actual station, and then we had one that had the dials on it.
Oh yeah.
So you could record off the air, off like a, you know, a TV antenna. And we're definitely losing any audience of anybody under 50 years old.
You know, it's funny because we're talking about, you know, with cable and everything, and how, like, you know, when we were kids, we just had the one, you know, like I just had New York. But then, and it was even before cable, but I got the wrestling from the Olympic on a different, it was a Spanish station from Paterson, New Jersey. They started showing the wrestling from the Olympic. And it was my first, I call it my WTF moment, because one of the stars of the promotion, in fact, I think he won the 1976 Battle Royal there, was Johnny Rods. But he wasn't Johnny Rods. He was Jabba Rook. And
that's right. Yeah.
And I'm thinking, like, wait a minute, that looks just like Johnny Rods, but it can't be. But wait, he's got JR in his boots, just like Johnny Rods, you know, and he wrestles just like, so that really threw me for a loop. And then, you know, then we started getting cable. Then I got CWF, Championship Wrestling from Florida. I got Georgia Championship Wrestling. And then a couple of years later, I got the AWA. So it was, you know, the magazines kept perfect kayfabe, and you could do that back at, now in the 60s and the 70s before cable. I remember one time when I first started watching the, you know, Vince McMahon Sr., he had this formula that worked for years and years. He'd bring in a new heel from one of the other territories, and a lot of times they'd rename them and, you know, go through the, you know, the prelim guys, then maybe usually, you know, get past a Dominic DiNucci, maybe attack Arnold Skolin, and then eventually get his Madison Square Garden match with Bruno. But they brought in this guy named Rocky Fitzpatrick, and the guy was invincible, went through everybody. And, you know, eventually he faced Bruno. He lost. It was Bob Orton Sr.
Oh.
It was Randy's, you know, I guess Randy's grandfather. But you could do that. And even in the magazines, like when he went to the WWF, he was Rocky Fitzpatrick. They never said, oh, this guy used to be Bob Orton Sr. They kept total kayfabe. So yeah, I think one of the disadvantages of cable, I think that's part of the reason why kayfabe is gone. It is Vince McMahon to a certain extent, but a lot of it was because of the fact that we had exposure to a lot more different wrestling promotions.
Oh yeah, I mean, when I was in law school in the early 90s, one of the things that we did was we had, you know, we had student subscriptions to Lexus and Westlaw, and we would, my friends and I would get news from like all around the world, and we would get wrestling news about, you know, matches that happened outside of California and stuff, and we just thought it was the coolest thing in the world. Like, you know, we would read Japanese stuff, we would read stuff, you know, WWF on tour, you know, in other countries, and go, oh my god, you know, can you believe that Hacksaw Jim Duggan would beat Ted DiBiase normally, because normally the other way around, it would be DiBiase beating the heck out of Hacksaw Jim Duggan all the time.
Right.
And then they, you know, you'd find out, oh, Hillbilly Jim actually got a countout win against Dino Bravo or something. You know, you'd like read about other house shows that, you know, WWE would never report on. And even like, you know, got titles changing hands, but then changing hands at another house show like a week later, so the WWE would never announce it. You know, it just would happen in back-to-back little shows that you know, happened so quickly that by the time the weekly show would come out, they wouldn't even announce that title change had happened. It just has to flip-flopped between two cities, you know, in 24 hours or something like that. Or there'd be some kind of just, you know, stipulation thing that they'd make up to say, oh no, the title didn't change hands, you know, even though the fans saw what they thought was a title change, you know, it didn't turn out being one. For me, why don't you show the fans some of the stuff that you wrote in? It's just cool.
Well, here is, let me see how there, I think you can see me just, there
you are, perfect,
right from that is the November 1969 issue of the Wrestler magazine. They actually had, for I don't know how many years, had a pen pal section that you could write in. You pretty much threw in your high school, or at that point it's junior high, little 4x6 picture. And then they asked for some basic information, your name, your address, who you wanted to have as a pen pal. And then if you like good guys or bad guys and your favorite wrestler. So for whatever reason, because Bruno was my favorite, that like there was never any doubt about that. But they had me, they must have had too many Brunos. So they used Spiros Arion as my favorite. And he was probably like my fifth favorite.
Hey.
So I actually, and I wanted, because I was a 14-year-old kid, so I wanted girls 12 to 14 as pen pals. Went up with about 7 of them. And one of them I actually wrote to for about 5 years. She was in Vancouver, British Columbia. And then I reconnected with her on Facebook. I think it was in 2009, like 35 years later.
Wow.
But yeah, that was a big, now I have to tell you a quick story. My sister wrote to, when she was 12, wrote to a 20-year-old guy. And it's kind of hard to believe that you know, nowadays that, back then, your address could actually be in a magazine, your home address. And this guy was like 2021 actually showed up at my house. And I always tell people my dad was the early day Chris Hansen, except that Chris Hansen would say, you know, why don't you have a seat? And my dad said, if you don't get the fuck out of my house, I'm going to kill you, to this guy. So, but yeah, I mean, it was a whole different world back then. You know, you mentioned about the tragedy you had with your magazines when they got flooded. In my case, I leaned too far into a Boston Crab on my younger brother. And of course, my parents were home and they heard him scream. And my punishment was to rip up my entire wrestling magazine collection, which I probably had about 200. There was a farmer's market that my parents went to every Saturday. They'd buy like provolone and pepperoni and things like that. You know, they had a good Italian deli there. But at the far end of the store, they had an old book and magazine shop. And this is 1969. So I would just run right there. And they had I found a 1924 issue of National Geographic. And this is like 45 years later. But I found a boatload of wrestling magazines. And I bought every single one of them. The guy went for like a dime. I found a fall 1959 issue of the Wrestling Review. Just like, for a wrestling fan, that was like, you know, winning the lottery. But yeah, they made me rip up every single one of my magazines. And I even said to them, like, can I go to the doctor and have a kidney removed instead? I mean, if I had to choose, I probably would have chose that. But that was probably...
Your brother probably most of all sold the thing.
He oversold, yeah. Yeah, nobody's confusing him with Mil Máscaras. He definitely oversold. But yeah, that was my punishment. And man, that's something I'll never forget.
Oh my God. No, when I went to college, the first thing my mom did was throw out I took my comics with me, thank God. So I still have those after all these years. But she threw out all the other stuff that I couldn't take with me. So all my Star Wars toys from like the original 77 ones, all my like G.I. Joe stuff that I had that's worth like $500 per figure, you know, now from the original, you know, G.I. Joe, the large figures from the 70s, you know, my Space 1999 stuff, which was and those Corgi toys, those, you know, like the Batmobile and the James Bond diecast metal ones. Just totally heartbreaking.
And any baseball card horror stories?
No, because I didn't collect baseball cards, although my brother's baseball cards and football cards were also all destroyed in that flooding of my dad's basement. So that's what happened. No, I fortunately took my comics with me. I put them in safe cases and I'm saving them all for my kids for their, you know, they can inherit it. They can sell them or keep them for the next generation if they want. If they do, some of those books are probably going to be worth like tens of thousands of dollars. Because like I was a big fan of like some series that, you know, at the time you don't think there's going to be anything about them. Like the Guardians of the Galaxy, okay? I bought them in the 70s when no one had ever heard of them. You know, I just liked the heroes that were involved. I thought they had some cool stories and all that. I thought they were a fun superhero team. And I had no idea that they would eventually become this major motion picture franchise. It's taken the books from being worth 35 cents to being worth $65, you know? So talk about it. I wish I could have invested in other things that had that high of an increase. With some of the dot-coms that I invested in the early 2000s, you know, turned into stuff that was worth that much.
I had them in a shoebox. I actually probably a couple of shoeboxes. Probably had a couple of thousand of them. And they went back to 1963. That was the first year I started collecting basically 63 tops. And I remember, like, the cards I was, believe it or not, the cards I was most thrilled to get was, one of them was Willie Mays, because I loved Willie Mays. And then I actually really enjoyed the Giants back then, the San Francisco Giants. I had a McCovey, I had a Jim Davenport, I had a Jose Pagan, trying to think of Juan Marichal, who's one of my favorite pitchers. But yeah, I
some of those are worth quite a bit.
Yeah, I'm trying to. What happened? So they went downstairs in the basement, which is like the dungeon. It was like Stu Hart's dungeon. You didn't get stretched, but and then I don't know where they went after that. My mom had said, because my mom sold our house to my sister in 1992 when my mom moved down to Florida. My sister had just sold a house about 4 years ago. And even like the last time I visited the house, I still went down to the basement. And I looked. I'm thinking like, I'm going to find. I looked under the stairwells. You know, I was hoping to God. Now, of course, what kind of condition would those cards have been in if I did find them? But just they probably would have crumbled upon, you know, touch. But
I also lost my vintage Atari 800, my original Atari computer that I owned. I was really hoping that when my dad died, I would reclaim that too. And that I had all sorts of discs and all sorts of like stuff that I don't know if you ever remember the company called Broderbund.
No.
If you'd have to be a computer guy, but they were a major software company that was in my same town they were in San Rafael, and my friends and I used to raid the Broderbund dumpster, and I would get posters and I would get like special disc displays and stuff like that, that again would be great collector's items. They're now, you know, gone to the way of, you know, a dumpster somewhere, you know.
What a shame.
Yeah. So I try not to throw away. It's tough when you're a parent. Your kids get so much crap when they're little kids that winds up being collectible, but you just don't have any place to store all of it for all eternity.
But how did you know? Like, I mean, when we were kids, we put baseball cards in the spokes of our bicycle wheels. I mean, you probably
people
had
people cut the ads out of comics.
Right.
You know, when you had a comic book ad, you know, for I was just talking about last week, we had a guest on who knew who Count Dante was and his kung fu death secrets. Here, let me go and actually pull that up for you, because I know that we were talking about that before the show was on here. And oh, wait a minute, this is the one with Count Dante on it. But he, you know, he was promising you know, to make you the deadliest man alive. And he had like this here, let me pull this up here. Now let me share this with the audience.
Yeah, I got one after that too, just to show how like ancient I am.
Yes.
Like I need a reminder.
Hold on. Yeah, exactly. Here. This is what I'm talking about. Do you remember that ad at all?
No. What year is that?
It's like the 70s.
Wow. Count Dante. Deadliest man alive. So he was going to give you his fighting tips, his, you know,
yes.
Secrets?
Yes.
Okay.
Except he absolutely was not any kind of karate guy. You know, he had no certification on it at all. He just sold a little booklet, you know, that like maybe took him like 25 cents to photocopy. And he sold it, you know, for like $5 to people and made a ton of money doing it. So
nice. That's
Count Dante for you.
So how much was that to learn his secrets?
It was like $5, I think.
Okay. That makes sense.
He says for free, but the free booklet tells you to buy his book for like $5. Which again, was like a photocopy pamphlet that probably cost him 10 cents to produce. So now let me give you the ability to.
So here's mine is learn karate, fear no man. And this one, you get the coupon on the bottom. Let's see. Yes. I want to become a karate master. This one was $1.98. So for $1.98, you could become a karate master. So I guess that makes sense. In 1969, $1.98, and then, you know, in the 70s. Well, it did kind of, he jacked it up a bit to the $5. He was greedy.
Yeah, exactly. Nobody ever said Count Dante was a great humanitarian.
Dante was living large back in the 70s.
To me, the saddest moment about wrestling magazines came when I finally met Bill Apter. And I mean, not that he was disappointing in any way, but I told him, Bill, I really was a huge fan of Pro Wrestling Illustrated and a lot of your articles. And I said, how did you guys come up with your top 10 lists? And, you know, I was expecting, like he said, well, you know, he would say, well, because we would sum up all the wins and losses of these guys and, you know, cross-reference it with the titles that they had and you know, we'd rank them based on, yeah, on demographics and computerized databases. And he said, no, we just come up with them like 10 minutes before the printing time. We usually forget that we haven't done the top 10. So we throw it around the water cooler for about 10 minutes. We come up with our top 10 list.
Very scientific.
Just broke my heart. Those top 10 lists were such a major part of my childhood and growing up discussion between me and my super geek wrestling friends.
And, I mean, wasn't it a rush when somebody that you really liked was, you know, in the top five? It's like, wow, he must really be good. I mean, they're ranking him number five, not, you know, they probably drew straws to see who was number five.
It would be why we would go to see some of the matches we went, because we're like, yeah, look at, you know, Sergeant Slaughter is now number three on the most popular list. Let's go see. I mean, it was like, you know, a top 10 of like records, you know, that you would want to listen to, you know, when they would give you the top 10 hits or whatever. And we would argue over those things. We would argue over whether Dusty Rhodes was better than Greg the Hammer Valentine, or whether, you know, Piper was better than Magnificent Morocco. Those be significant, like, you know, lunchtime arguments that we would have. We'd say like, but look, you know, Morocco is the Intercontinental Champion at that point. And, you know, what has Piper ever done? You know, and we'd say, yeah, well, Rick Martel is an AWA champion. He should be ranked higher than, you know, King Kong Bundy, you know, and just back and forth and back and forth. And to find out that, you know, they didn't really care. They just, you know, had a deadline to meet and like, you know, let's just throw some guys that they might as well roll dice and come up with a winner.
You know, life doesn't give you do-overs, but I graduated college. Well, I graduated later than this, but I would have graduated college had I gone for 4 years straight in 1977. And I think, man, like if I, back then the magazines were in their heyday, and, you know, I've done a lot of writing now for Pro Wrestling Stories, but if I could have started my writing career back then, writing for the magazines, man, oh man. And it's so funny because here's another, I'll show it to you real quick. This is right after Dory Funk Jr. won the World Heavyweight Championship from Gene Kaniski in 69. And what the other wrestlers had to say about Dory Funk Jr. And you got Eddie Graham, Bruno, the Sheik. The Sheik goes, Funk is a bum. They're all bums. But, you know, and like when you read this, you're thinking like, man, that Sheik, man, what a rotten guy he is. But it was one of the writers who's writing it. Like
exactly. Three-quarters of that stuff, yeah, you never had to talk to the wrestlers at all.
No, yeah. Of course not.
Sometimes the wrestlers, when they saw that stuff, that was the first time they'd seen it at all. They're like, really? I said that? Yes, I know.
One of the writers, they have a fight. Well, I was Bruno last time. So, you know, well, you could be Bruno this time. I'll be Eddie Graham. You be the Sheik, you know. And that's pretty much, but we didn't know. I mean, we bought it all hook, line, and sinker.
Sure, and we thought these magazines had special access to all these guys, and that they were, you know, like, you know, Sports Illustrated or whatever, that they were following these guys around the country, and you know, whenever a match would end, they'd be there with their notepads and say, you know.
Well, back in the day, it was a little portable tape recorder, you know.
Right, right. Yeah, but we thought that they were following them, but most of the time, they never went anywhere and didn't see any of these men, or they just have some kid write to them about what the results of a match was, you know, or, you know, to give a description of the match. And then they just write it up as if they were there. And, right. You know, I always imagine these wrestling guys were following these guys all around the country, but it did, you know, it didn't turn out to be that way. So, you know, I guess you learn.
What a gig that would have been, though, if that was really true.
I know. I know. We can always dream, can't we? You know, that there'd be a job like that where you could go. I mean, I guess the closest is Mike Leno, you know, with all his photography stuff.
Yeah, he went all over.
If we had him on the show this week, we would have never gotten a word in edgewise.
He would
He would have talked so much. And I know, Mike, you are not listening to this podcast right now. So I can say this stuff about you, and you'll never hear about it. So how do you like that?
I would have gotten as far as, hi, I'm Benny Scala. That would have been my whole promo.
Yes, exactly. And he would have run up and down your, you know, telling us all about the fan club he had for Gene LaBelle and so forth. You know, we would not have gotten in much. But so do you have anything? So I asked you earlier off air that you don't really have any wrestling collection of anything that's cool. I mean, I'm sure didn't you collect anything from your times as a fan other than wrestling?
Not, you know, really, at once that happened with, you know, I guess I was, 14, 15, with the Boston Crab incident. I'm like, you're right, he oversold it. Next time, in fact, I think I'll see him this week. I'm going to confront him on that, that he oversold. But, I mean, ever since then, that just really burst my balloon. I never really, I started buying them again, but it was never really the same. It's really funny, Davey O'Hannon, the wrestler, has a very similar story. His was a little bit different, though. He got a bad report card, and it was the same outcome, though. He had to rip all his magazines up.
Ugh.
You know, just to a
parents,
kid.
Don't do that to your kids' collectibles. Parents.
No. But
don't,
I mean, like,
destroy the collectibles. Take away their computer or make sure they don't watch TV or, you know, take away a trip from them or something. But don't destroy collectibles. That's
it taught me a lesson, though, because I switched over to the Hammerlock.
It leaves less of an indelible mark on him, and
or even the crossface. That's better because he put my hand over his mouth in case he wanted to scream.
Yeah, my brother and I, we used to wrestle all the time when we were younger, and we used to put all the different moves on each other. But then, like when my brother went to college for a year, I like took that year and I seriously started lifting. I mean, I started being really like massive weightlifting. And then like, so, cause my brother was always, he's bigger than me and he's taller than me and he weighs more than I do. So I would always be like trying to escape out of his moves. And my brother, for who he is, I mean, he doesn't look strong, but he's deceptively strong. He's like a Bob Orton kind of strong. I mean, you look at Bob Orton and you say to yourself, you know, the original Bob, not Bob Orton Sr., but the cowboy Bob Orton. You look at him, and he's, you know, he gets in there with other wrestlers and you go, or like Buddy Roberts, you know. You don't look at Buddy Roberts and think, there's a really strong guy. But, like, you wouldn't want to fight him. And my brother's the same kind of way. He's like, he doesn't look big and all muscular, but he's just got, like, raw built-in strength. So he'd, like, pound me and just... I'd have to get away from him all the time. But then I spent like a year lifting, and he came back, and we were wrestling at my aunt's house, you know, just doing some floor stuff. And I just put me in a headlock like he always did, and he used to just crush my head with it. And I back suplexed him. And from that point forwards, that was like the last time he wanted to wrestle with me.
Now, who's older?
My brother is, by a year and 5 days.
See, I had an advantage. I was six years older than my brother, so I could like hoist him up in the Bruno backbreaker. One hold you never see anymore is the Hangman's hold, which was Baron Cicluna's finisher, where you just, you know, you grab him around both hands, behind the under his chin rather, and just lift him from behind, kind of like a backbreaker.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
I'm not describing it very well, but like that.
No,
was,
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, I could do all those things, and he couldn't retaliate because he was sick. You know, I was 12, 13, and he was 7. I mean, very unfair.
Yeah, well, no, my brother and I were more evenly matched, but I was never as big as him. So, you know, I always had to come up with a more stealthy approach and move. But when I was then when I did the lifting stuff, that's when we said, you know what, we're just both better off watching this on TV together than, you know, actually trying to do anything in person. Because once you get into high school, you know, your ability to like really mess up another person gets pretty extreme.
You know, that could be a show in itself, though, how we tortured our brothers.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That's a 2-hour show.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yes, I'd have to pull out some of my old whiny Dr. Demento records I used to play, you know, and stuff like that, and sing along with them. That would usually get my brother to want to just destroy me and crush me.
Oh, he didn't like Dr. Demento?
No, he did, but there were certain songs that were so annoying and so obnoxious that, like, once I knew he hated them, I would play them for him nonstop.
One of them had to be Fish Heads, right?
No, we were okay with that.
All right.
But if you ever look up the sound that's made by worms, look it up on YouTube. The sound that's made by worms. It might be the most annoying song ever made. I'm serious about that.
I'll have to look it up. That was Dr. Demento was the first time I ever heard Pencil Neck Geek by Freddie Blassie.
Yeah, and Dr. Demento did play a lot of cool wrestling songs. You know, he would play stuff from the wrestling album, the original wrestling album. He would play stuff from like a band called Battle Royale that did a song about Andre the Giant. They would play stuff from, you know, Adrian Street's What I Would Do to You, you know. Exotic Adrian Street had a little album that he put together. I don't know if you that up.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, you should. That's another great YouTube watch is Adrian Street's What I Would Do to You. Very hilarious.
Didn't Weird Al get his start with Dr. Demento? I thought I.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, absolutely. I don't know if you saw the Weird Al movie. The Netflix one that came out.
I thought you meant UHF, which is one of my favorite movies.
I didn't see UHF. I saw UHF, and then I went and saw him live during the UHF tour.
Okay.
That's how I've been a Dr. Demento fan from the early 70s because it was on KFOG. It was first on KFAT here in the Bay Area, and then KFOG, and it was. That was another one, like my wrestling tapes, that I would, like, record, and I would get home in time, you know, for when the show aired, and I would, you know, record certain spots of the Dr. Demento show to make, you know, mixtapes of Dr. Demento stuff, and I had stuff going all the way through from the late 70s to the early 80s, and then my brother, another time he came up, went to a party after graduation, and they broke into the car that we shared, and they stole all our tapes.
Damn.
Oh, that was so heartbreaking to lose all these, like, mixtapes and custom tapes that I'd recorded off the radio. Of course, now, you know, YouTube takes care of all that stuff. You can pretty much get anything that you used to have on a mixtape in, you know, digital quality on YouTube. But back then, but for about 10 or 12 years, I had to do without all the sound that's made by worms until I could find it on YouTube. So, you know, that was a loss. But, you know, I whenever there would be like something that would deal with wrestling, I would record it. I'd have my VCR. Once I did own a VCR, I just knew when stuff would be on. I had like all sorts of like great like TV interviews, like when Arsenio Hall interviewed Randy the Macho Man Savage on there. I don't know, did you ever see that?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, and like the when Bobby the Brain Heenan was on Regis and Kathy Lee with Rick Rude. That was an incredible thing, and when Ox Baker was on Price is Right, You know, I just having to catch all that stuff when it was going on, and I recorded it, you know, and I had some amazing wrestling tapes. The problem is I didn't catalog all of them. I did catalog some of them, but I didn't catalog all of them. And now to watch back all those matches and convert them all to digital would take me like 300 hours of sitting around watching. And, you know, we already had the apocalypse with COVID, and I didn't do it. So, you know, if I can't find time during the COVID apocalypse, when we're all locked down for weeks, to do any of that stuff. And I still ask myself, why didn't I do that? It would have been so smart to do that and to, like, scan a ton of photos. But I didn't. I just sat around feeling sorry for myself like everybody else did.
Yeah.
And wondering when I was going to catch it.
Did you? No.
Same here. Feel like the one person in the zombie apocalypse who didn't get to get turned into a zombie.
Same here.
Oh, you didn't catch it either? Wow. Nope. Well, I mean, there's still time if you're
right.
Dedicated, you're devoted to it. You could still get it if you want.
That's my two goals are that and checking out the worm song.
You might wish you had COVID.
The sound
that's made by worms. I wish I could remember the guy who actually sang it. Or it's not really he doesn't really sing it. You'll just hear it. You'll hear it, and then you'll say, what the hell? Why the hell did you tell me about that song?
Was he a one-hit wonder, or did he have any
follow-ups? I don't even think that's anywhere near a hit.
Okay.
It's anywhere near a hit. So
one pump chump.
Yes. I think that's perfect way to describe it. So believe it or not, weirdly enough, we're about at an hour. You know, it's been a lot of fun gabbing with you about all this crazy stuff. And, you know, I don't care if we get a million hits or we get, you know, just you and me watch this over again one day. It's just fun to have a chance to talk about some of these things and some of the stuff that I remember from back in the day.
It's a BS session with an extended audience.
Yes.
Depends on how, even if it's five people, it's five, you know.
Yeah, no, I mean, not that I don't appreciate all you listeners out there, you know, I do, every single one, but sometimes it's more than others. I never know how many, you know, whether it's going to be a huge hit or whether it's going to be just a few people. But, you know, I hope we reach into the minds of some other people out there and get them to think, you know, fondly about the magazine stuff they read when they were younger and all that stuff.
Well, maybe you can entitle this episode, I Once Had a Basement Full of Wet Women.
Ha! 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 Yes.
your Playboy magazine.
Moldy girls. Yes. Moldy girls are the best girls.
Right.
You know, but
I need love too.
Yeah. All right. Well, why don't you promote Dan and Benny in the Ring and anything else you want
to? Yeah. Well, first of all, I want to say hi to everybody at Boogie's Wrestling Camp, BWC. I am the commissioner of Boogie's Wrestling Camp. That's the school run by Jimmy Valiant, WWE Hall of Famer, located in Shawsville, Virginia, which is about 50 miles north of Parts Unknown.
We are huge in Shawsburg, Virginia, by the way. The show is huge there.
Number one, right?
Number one.
So, yeah, you know, great school. They put a show on every Sunday from noon until 4. And just great place to learn how to wrestle. Hangman Adam Page is a former graduate of BWC. You're going to see a lot more of Jimmy's students on TV on Monday and Friday nights. So I got that, and that keeps me busy. And then I do my writing for Pro Wrestling Stories. Just had my 27th story published about Pampero Firpo. And we had
his daughter on.
Mary Fries. Did you too have it?
Yeah.
Yeah, great, great lady. Very, very knowledgeable, very, yes. Very personable.
Yes.
And then, Dan and Benny, we're up to 100. I think our next episode is going to be number 125. We actually charted, I don't know how, but number 8 in Ireland. So two Italian guys, you know, number 8 in Ireland. Go figure, right?
Well, it was my show that I think put you over.
It might have been, yes.
You were probably number 8, probably number 9 or 10.
It was
then you had me on the show, and that pushed you up because I am gigantic in Ireland.
Buddy Osotello, right?
Yes. That is great. That is great. No, I'm, you know, you guys are still a huge success. I love being on your show. Maybe, again, I've always said, like I did, when you run completely out of guests and you have absolutely nowhere else to turn, you know, you can always count on me to do another show with you guys. I loved doing the movie show. The movie show was so much fun.
That and talking about food. That was another one. I think that we did
we'll do that again.
We did that here, yes.
I promise. So start saving up more food.
Although, like, I've been on a diet now for, this is my 8th month. I'm down 55 pounds.
Wow.
But I don't know if you remember the Munsters episode where Herman has to go to his high school, his army reunion, and he can't fit into his uniform. And so he did, Grandpa actually straps him down to a gurney in the basement and leaves the TV on. And it's about, you know, of course, there's like about 9 commercials in a row. It was Thanksgiving Day, actually.
Yeah.
They show turkeys and everything. Herman like busts loose from the gurney and crashes through the wall and through the wall of his next door neighbor's house and just sits down at the table and starts eating. So I think it's going to get pretty close to that for me.
Get the honey, Junior.
Yeah, got the honey.
Anyway, it's great having you on, Benny. I will send you a copy of this when we're done, and you're always welcome to be on the show. It's great to have you.
It's always a pleasure.
Thanks, Benny. I'll see you again real soon. Best to you and your family.
Likewise.
Good night.
Night, folks.